There are headwinds in the ag economy. We know that. But are those headwinds being reflected by the market that some say matters the most to farmers? We'll talk land values this morning, then get crop updates from Illinois and South Dakota in this week's Farmer Forum.
Live from the foothills of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Paul Shadegg from Farmers National. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Ryan Wagner and Sherman Newland. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. How are you today?
Oh, really good.
Good.
Hanging right in there.
74 degrees already up here.
74.
Outside the bunker, yeah.
Woo.
Yeah. Yep. We're heading back into the 80s. Might start to cool off just a little bit tomorrow and into Friday, and then the weekend is still looking spectacular.
Excellent. Well, it is the, Monday will be the first unofficial day of official unofficial summer. Something to look forward to there.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I am so much looking forward to it. Okay.
Yeah,
Dr. Ernie Goss was on with us yesterday and talking about the banker survey of that he does for the Rural Main Street Index, Economic Index. They talk with bankers on that. We're going to, and the bankers really don't see much movement in land prices in the next 12 months.
That's right.
So, let's talk to Paul Shadegg and see what farmers are thinking. Because as far as I can tell, Davis, and you are the one to know, being the editor of Landowner at Pro Farmer, there hasn't been much of a back off in demand for land, has there?
There really hasn't. And in conversations with land people, you know, the expectation is not necessarily we're going to top and then crash or fall or soften or whatever, but probably just for sort of a pause while the market kind of figures out, all right, where do we go from here type of a deal. And I think that's what we're beginning to see.
Exactly. Okay. Okay. Well, hey, let's go ahead and get started here. We've got a lot of important news that we need to get through.
Sure thing. Let's begin with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, whose negotiators repeatedly have warned the White House that a deal on the debt ceiling will not be possible unless Democrats agree to cut spending next year, not just freeze spending. The White House officials offered a spending freeze at fiscal 2023 levels. McCarthy said that's not a compromise he's interested in. One of McCarthy's chief negotiators added there are no more meetings planned. The impasse means it's likely the House and Senate will both have to vote on any deal next week, Chip.
Okay.
To the House
here's
and Senate.
Here's the signal that I'm getting from that. The White House officials offered a spending freeze at 23 levels. McCarthy says that's not a compromise that he's interested in. Mm-hmm. If he's not interested in that compromise, it's because he doesn't have the votes in the House to pass that bill.
Mm.
Okay. So they want to get it back to 22 levels. And, you know, he's just basically saying, listen, we can't go forward spending more than what we did last year.
U.S. economic activity rose in May to the highest pace in 13 months, showing persistent resilience to rising interest rates and high inflation. Data firm S&P Global's surveys of purchasing managers showed economic gains were led by service-providing businesses, which reported stronger demand for travel, dining out, and other leisure activities. Chip, we reported was that yesterday that air travel is way up. So things are starting to happen here.
Does this sound like a pause in the interest rate increases to you?
Not necessarily, I'm afraid.
Right.
Well, some 61% of U.S. adults say they have money invested in the stock market. That's the highest percentage Gallup has measured since 2008. Stock ownership fell during the Great Recession and stayed depressed for more than a decade, including lows of 52% in 2013 and 2016. Most Gallup surveys prior to 2008 found 60% or more of U.S. adults owning stock. The price of copper is showing signs of a sudden weakening in global demand, with the largest discount against its futures equivalent in nearly two decades. This drop indicates concerns over China's stalled economic rebound and faltering industrial activity. Chip, is Dr. Copper sort of the oat's nose of the greater commodity sector?
Well, there are analysts that certainly believe that copper is a leading indicator. Dan Vaught, who does a lot of analysis and works with Brian Grady at Pro Farmer, is one of those guys. And it certainly does give us an idea of industrial activity out there. And it just means that China is still stumbling out of the gate.
Indeed. Well, 1 week after Sam Altman, CEO of ChatGPT and creator of OpenAI, told a Senate committee that the technology, quote, can go quite wrong, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Biden administration Tuesday announced plans to seek public input on AI issues such as standards, regulations, investments, and improved trust and safety practices. Russia's prime minister signed several agreements with China during a trip to Beijing, saying relations between the two countries are, quote, at an unprecedented high level amid sensational pressure from the collective West. The deals included commitments to strengthen trade in ag and services. Ecuador's president recently signed a trade deal with China. Similarly, countries including Chile, Costa Rica, and Peru have free trade agreements with Beijing, and Panama and Uruguay are reportedly planning treaties. China's trade with Latin America has skyrocketed from $12 billion in 2000 to $495 billion in 2022, becoming South America's top trading partner. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Hey, let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Hey, Margie, what's the latest? What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Chip. So 2 years ago, Landis, which is a co-op based in Iowa, launched its Innovation Connector, really with the goal of bringing more technology to the farmer while improving efficiency and profitability. Now, just earlier this month, they've launched a new joint venture with a group called DefenseWorks. This joint venture is called LandWorks, and it's going to have three benefits for Landis farmers. One, Matt Karstens, the CEO of Landis, says it's going to reverse the script. They are going to address problems to find solutions, not taking solutions and trying to go find problems, which he says happens so often today with technology. Two, LandWorks is a place where farmers can bring ideas to be protected with their intellectual property and help them build businesses from the ideas they've created. And three, this is about putting the farmer back at the center of innovation and get the ecosystem, resources, and talent that is required to do just that. Now, DefenseWorks has, this is now their 12th innovation hub. Specifically, they've served a lot in the national defense space and served soldiers. And so both leaders of DefenseWorks and Landis draw some parallels between soldiers and farmers. But really, what Matt Karstens, the CEO of Landis, says is that they want to put farmers in the middle of getting the most value and get paid for the work that they do and the value that's created all the way through the supply chain and bring back money to the farm. So LandWorks is going to be the new pivot point of their innovation hub, again, that was launched 2 years ago. Lots more to come, an interesting development, and maybe even a model for the future.
Outstanding, Margie. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. I like that, getting the money back to the farm. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Get more at www.thedailyscoop.com. We're talking land with Paul Shadegg from Farmers National next here on AgriTalk.
The Scoop on AgriTalk is brought to you by Taranis, committed to moving the acre forward. To drive more value from every acre, visit acreforward.com.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us this morning. Okay, land values. Davis, is there anything more interesting to farmers to talk about than land values. You got the equipment values.
Mm-hmm.
You've got markets. You've got weather. I get that. Uh-huh. But, boy, when there's an auction in the neighborhood, everybody wants to know what the selling price was, right?
That's a. There is nothing more interesting or important for farmers to pay attention to than land values.
Shameless. You are shameless.
It's true, though.
Landowner,
it's true,
editor.
Yes, yes. This is the well, you, I put on the hat, you know, before we signed on.
Excellent.
But yes, absolutely. And, you know, especially when it comes to the these little microcosms of auctions around. I've got a few questions for Paul, too, about these auctions and whatnot. Let's bring him in. Let's see
All
what
right.
He's got
Paul
for
Shadegg
us.
Is the Senior VP, Real Estate Operations at Farmers National. Paul, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Great lead in, guys. You know, there is nothing more exciting than talking about land values for sure.
That's exactly right. Okay. The last time that you and I talked, Paul, we recapped what was a strong 2022 land market. Let's talk about how the market is doing through the first one third of 2023. Yeah, I was looking at the Farmers National Twitter feed and looking at some of the auctions that are coming up, and it seems like there's a decent amount of ground that is up for auction. Is that the right read?
Yeah, I think so. When we start, you know, this is definitely a slower time of year for land auction or land sales in general. But with the over the past 10, 15 years, the buyer demographics have definitely changed. And so now what we're seeing is more non-typical buyers. They're not afraid to buy land in the spring or summer during a growing season where typically with that just didn't happen. So when we're looking at our pipeline from today until, you know, September, when things really start cranking up, I can tell you that pipeline's starting to fill up. We're really excited about that.
Okay.
And then the fact that we are scheduling auctions that are happening now. And then also some listings and some higher profile listings that are going to come to the market probably here very soon.
Okay. More non-typical buyers. Are you talking about investors?
Yeah. They've been part of that equation for, you know, the past many years, but, and that's what's kind of shifted our time frame of marketing. We used to say we sell land from October to March and the rest of the year, you know, there's not much that happens, but those guys are not afraid to go in and negotiate payback of inputs or take a lease halfway through a year or something like that. And that's where it keeps driving that market. That doesn't necessarily mean that a farmer isn't going to bid on that land, because if it comes up for sale and it's in his wheelhouse, you know, they're definitely going to be there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Are farmers still the number one buyers?
Yep. You know, just had a conversation with a banker last week about where we see that changing. And right now we're not seeing much change when we look at it with throughout our company. They're still the largest group. It's about 80% of the total land sales that we transact are still those farmer operators that are the buyers. We still have non-typical buyers down in the investment groups and things like that, that they're still bidding on land, but they're just not always the successful buyer.
Okay. The Jan-Feb-March quarter, was it an active quarter for Farmers National?
Yeah. So when we look at, it's hard to compare 2021 and 2022 because those were absolutely record-breaking years for us.
Yeah.
But when I start looking at the five-year averages, we're still above pace of the five-year average. You know, typically we see things slow down as we get into April, May for sure. When I look at our April numbers, we were above our five-year pace on both sales volume and sales value. So still encouraging numbers there. And what that's going to help do is help sustain these values that we've pushed up. We're not seeing that value increase like we were a year ago, but we are definitely still seeing some good stable values. And for high quality land, we're still seeing, you know, some great competition, which sometimes drives that above market value.
Yeah, Davis, Paul, that fits your outlook, doesn't it?
Well, it really does. And Paul, I've got a question about urban sprawl and the premium that development potential can add to some pieces of property. When farmers go, I mean, like I know in my local area, oh yeah, this place is ripe for development. Do farmers see that and think, oh shoot, that's going to go out of reach in a big hurry? Or are they still willing to kind of jump in there and try to capture that land?
Yeah, anytime you're within a metro area and there's potential for development, I think mm-hmm. that agriculture producers tend to step back and think, well, you know, I might go ahead and go to the sale, but I'm probably not going to push it as high as some of these guys. And in visiting with some developers, you know, a lot of those guys are looking at long-term gain in value, not short-term. If you're within a certain perimeter of a metro area, it could be developed very quickly because there's definitely a good demand for people wanting to get out away from the concentrated areas of the city. But there's many of them. We had a conversation with a guy here not too long ago that said, you know, my idea is I'm going to buy this. I'm probably going to hold it for 15 years before it really becomes development potential. Yep. But they are willing to pay a good price for it. And I think I have more farm operators that said, you know, instead of buying something like that, I may sell something like that go buy something farther out.
Yeah. When you see that happen at an auction, if you were interested in that piece of ground and it fits in with your operation, you want to go talk to that developer and be the tenant for the next 15 years.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And sometimes those are fun to watch because you have a guy that'll bid up to, you know, X amount that may be a farm operator. And then the next thing you know is he's introducing himself to the guy that has the high bid. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. What else, Davis?
Well, I'm curious also, I got to go to the pandemic thing because there was a lot of talk about the new normal and we're changing the way that things are done. And we saw a real shift over to online auctions in the land market. And I'm wondering what vestiges of the pandemic new normal are going to stick with us. And are there maybe some that are surprising you that are like, huh, well, I thought that was going to stick with us, but it's not.
Yeah, there's not many things that are not sticking. And okay. I was the first one, you know, when the pandemic hit and we started to have parking lot auctions and we had to scramble to get, you know, an online platform set up. And today's world is that's expected and it has nothing to do with the pandemic anymore. It has to do with convenience. Yep. So a guy can be out planting corn and buy a farm on his phone. And, and some people, they like the anonymity that they don't want to sit in a room and face their neighbors to bid on a piece of property. And then the other side of it is just, you know, people like yourselves that want to kind of follow, where's this land market going? What's really happening? And they want to experience what's driving that market and how much excitement there is in bidding. And so we have a lot of people that, you know, just that'll view those simulcast auctions. And we still believe that there's a place for those live auctions. We, you know, we employ a lot of really great auctioneers and they do a great job. And there are people that want to be in the room and physically bid. And the nice thing is the pandemic forced our hand and we had to, you know, develop that. And now it's just expected. And and that's fine. We've figured out how to navigate through it. And it's worked out well.
Hey, Paul, the headwinds for the land market. We've got about a minute left. Higher interest rates, number one on the list.
Yeah. You know, our Clayton Becker, our president, and I were having a conversation yesterday about, you know, where are we at on things? And he put it very well. He calls it profit or pressure. And, you know, there's still some great momentum in the ag economy. And, then we look at what are the pressures, and interest rates are definitely going to play a part in it. We're starting to see a little bit of that. We're starting to see less cash being used, a little more lending happening across the country. So I've said this before when we've talked, any hiccup in the commodity markets is going to have a pretty direct effect on land value. So So that, you know, we had a little bit of a scare here recently when we saw markets come down. And I think as long as we can maintain some of those levels, you know, this still looks like a good opportunity.
Outstanding. Good stuff, Paul. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you guys. Anytime.
All right. That is Paul Shadegg. He is the Senior VP Real Estate Operations at Farmers National. All right. We've got Sherman and Ryan standing by. It's time for this week's Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, corn is trying to make it 3 days in a row. This is kind of, it's turning into something.
Yeah, it is, Chip. And I think we got too cheap on the pullback, and that's the biggest thing. You know, we're seeing corrected buying in here. The question, as we sit here at mid-morning, is can corn hold on and win the battle? Because wheat is pulling sharply to the downside at the moment. And so you got the conflicting markets going on. And so we'll have to see if corn can win out over wheat or not. Crude oil market's helping out, but the dollar is also higher. And so that's, providing some potential headwinds.
You know, the headlines are flipping and flopping on this wheat market right now. And the wheat market is willing to react.
Yeah, and you know, seasonally, we're almost into the winter wheat harvest now, and just not a good time for wheat bulls. So they're going to need something pretty spectacular to happen from a bullish standpoint, I think, to fend off some of that seasonal pressure that's ahead.
Yeah, okay. And then we've got some mixed trade in the soybeans. Bean meal slightly lower, and bean oil is trading to the upside, kind of caught in the middle there. Finally, some pluses in the livestock trade. What's going on?
Yeah, so starting cattle, biggest gains are there. And every time we try to break that market, we just see buyers underneath it. And the biggest reason is that the futures are trading below the cash market and well below the cash market. So while cash trade isn't established yet for the week, there's no real reason to go down, and we're seeing buyer interest develop as a result. The hog market really struggled recently, but seeing modest corrective gains here at mid-morning and as the cash market continues to strengthen.
Good stuff, Brian. Thank you. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us for this week's Farmer Forum. Let's get it started. Sherman Newland over in Southern Illinois. Good morning, Sherman. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Chip. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, glad that you are here. And we've got Ryan Wagner up in northern South Dakota. Hey, Ryan, it's been a long time. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a little while. Doing well, Chip. Doing well.
Good. What are you doing today?
Right now I'm in our sprayer driving from field to field. So trying to get a little spraying done here. Pre-emerge and burn down on corn before it pops up, and got a lot of stuff going on today. Planting beans, planting corn, spraying. So we're getting stuff done, though. It's good.
Good, good, good. Tell me about the season. It got started late for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. We got going on spring wheat that first week of May. Field conditions still weren't great for planting corn or beans or anything, so we got some wheat done before a little rain shower came through, and then we got rolling on corn on the 12th of May. And since then, we've had a really good two-week run here. Got most of our corn in, very limited prevent plants. Got our wheat wrapped up. Got a good start on beans here on Monday, and should be pretty close to at least in a good spot by Memorial Day anyway. I don't think we'll quite get done with beans, but we'll be caught up on spraying, done with corn, and in a good spot. So we've had a good 2 weeks here and kind of ready for a break, honestly.
I hear you. You're far enough north that you basically had North Dakota conditions early in the spring, right?
Right, yeah. You know, southern part of South Dakota, especially south of, I'd say Highway 212, they were a good week or two ahead of us.
Yeah.
Up here in the corner, up in northeast corner, we were more in line with what you'd expect out of North Dakota, where we were delayed and didn't turn a wheel until about that 5th of May.
Yeah. Ryan, the last 2 weeks are a godsend.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a couple shots of a tenth of an inch of rain come through and shut us down for a little bit. But for the most part, we've had good dry conditions and planting conditions are good. And we could use a little shot of rain right now just to activate the trees and get a little rain on top of everything we planted. But we're sitting in good shape here.
Okay. All right. Hey, stay there. We'll get back to you here in just a bit. Sherman, tell me about your season. How did it get started for you?
We got along really well. We got started early. We planted all our beans first, about the 10th of April, 11th of April in there. We got started planting beans. The ground was in good condition, so we just kept on planting beans while the guys were putting on ammonia for corn. And we got all our beans planted. This is only the second time I've ever done that completely before we've ever planted any corn. Then we planted some commercial green beans that we raise under irrigation. Got that done and switched over to corn and, finished up corn the first week of May and here we sit. So,
okay. Planting all your beans before corn, was that by design or was that determined by field conditions?
Field conditions more than anything.
Okay.
I mean, if the ground's too wet or too, not good, planting good conditions, we won't plant them. But the ground was dry, and we ended up no-tilling a lot of the beans after we ran a vertical tillage tool last fall. And boy, did it plant nice, It took them two to three weeks to come up, but they're all up. Yeah. We got a great stand of beans.
Good. Now, the last time you did that, did you see an impact on yield from that longer growing season?
We did. That was the best farm average we ever had. We did that about 2 years ago. We started, I think April 5th or something like that, and planted all our beans. And we had a lot of 80 bushel beans that year. So hoping the same thing can happen this year, but, the weather forecast looks pretty dry.
Yeah. Tell me about that. We just started talking about it yesterday, really, that all of a sudden, things have turned dry out there. What's going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, the forecasters are not showing any rain through the heart of the Midwest, Iowa, all Illinois, Indiana, for at least 10 days, 2 weeks. I mean, the first chance of rain we've got now is 6th of June, I think, and that's iffy. And our temperature is going to be up in the 90s. And, some of our areas have not had a lot of rain. I mean, we've been getting a tenth here, a couple tenths there. Our northern ground is getting a little on the dry side. So after 10 days, 2 weeks of this, we're going to be wanting to rain really bad.
Okay. Now, one thing, I don't know if everybody knows this or not, and I would guess no, but Sherman and Ryan have something else in common other than just them being a farmer. They are also risk managers, brokers. And I'm curious, Sherman, as you're looking out your back door, is that some incentive to adjust your marketing plans?
I mean, the market is starting to bounce. I mean, we're getting a nice rebound. I mean, we're, 30 cents off our lows we made in corn last week in that December contract. It does have some guys, coming in, buying some call options on some previous sales that they've made. And I don't disagree with that theory, because if the market, is extremely short right now and you got 3-day weekend, you got an extended model forecast that shows, hot, dry weather for a big chunk of the Midwest, but we'll see. you know, Monday night's going to be the, you know, the tail of the tape. See what that weather forecast looks when it's coming in Monday night. You know, you can look like a hero or a goat, you know, like on Monday morning with all this. But, I mean, it does have some guys, you know, a little – they're talking about it. There's several guys talking about, you know, the prior years, 83, you know, 2012, kind of the same thing. You know, I'm not in that camp yet, but it's looking, you know, like we've got some, you know, rally potential anyway into this market.
Right. Ryan, what's the conversation sound like with the guys that you work with on risk management? Is this are the potential for a drought or some drier conditions, is that sneaking its way into your conversations?
You know, not really so much up here. Everybody's pretty well focused on getting the crop put in and getting wrapped up with that. And I think everybody's of the mindset up here is we're just looking for a bounce to sell now. I mean, everybody's sat there pretty well unhedged for the most part, you know, or limited hedges on, watching it go from $6 back in February or whatever all the way down below $5. So I guess what we're trying to decide right now is what does a bounce look like and where do we re-engage here and sell? Because I think for guys that have stuff planted up here, I think we're going to feel pretty good about it once it comes up. So, you know, looking out our back door, there's no real concerns at the moment. You get a little farther south in South Dakota, they're getting pretty dry. And, you know, of course, Illinois, the chatter lately. So we've got one eye on our crop and what it looks like, and also one eye on the national picture, realizing that that's probably going to play a bigger role on what that bounce does look like if we get a rally here that we want to sell.
Okay. What are your thoughts on that, what the bounce does look like? I mean, if we don't get back to the insurance price, I think it'll be the first time that the D's corn contract doesn't at least trade to that spring insurance price. Is that 590? Is that still a possibility?
Well, it's all going to depend on weather conditions, of course. But, you know, as I've talked about on your show in the past, I always look at that as a benchmark, that insurance price. And, you know, on corn, just off the top of my head, we typically have a, you know, 10 to 15% rally above that mark, which has not happened this year yet, of course. But my expectations are quite a bit lower than that. I think, you know, initially this 535 to 550 area, I think is a good spot to get started if you think you're going to have a good crop or if things look good. And if it keeps going up, I mean, I think you got to sell more from there. This downturn that we've had from six down below five, you know, that needs to be respected. I don't think we're just going to claw it all back here without any problem. I'm, you know, still looking at that 2013 analog year as a roadmap. And we had some bounces in there, but it pretty well was straight down the entire year in 2013. So I think that's something we really need to respect.
Yeah. Sherman, what's your thought there?
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I mean, I'm not looking for a huge rally. You know, we have some retracement levels, you know, in that 531 to 540 area. That would be a good place to, you know, make some catch up sales. You know, can we get back to that 570 area where we started our, you know, our fall, our sell off? I think it's possible, but it's going to be all based off weather, yeah. You know, whether we do that or not. And, you know, like you said, we've never not went back up and reached that spring insurance price, but, you know, that doesn't mean we have to this year. Yeah. You know, so, you know, exports are bad, you know, demand is down, you know, South America's got a big corn crop coming. There's a lot of negativity out there, to push this market back lower. And if it looks like we are going to have a, you know, some rain starting in the middle of June, like some forecasters are predicting, you know, and maybe a wet July and August, and we have a huge crop, then yeah, we need to make some sales up here, you know, and I highly encourage that. And, you know, and guys are still sitting on a decent amount of old crop, believe it or not. and there's not much new crop sold. I mean, I sit on an ethanol plant board. I sit on a board and ethanol plant, and we haven't bought a lot of new crop stuff yet. You know, guys are just waiting, you know, to see if we can get some higher prices. So,
gotcha.
You know, hopefully we can get there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, we're in the middle of our farmer forum. Sherman Newland from Illinois, Ryan Wagner up in South Dakota. Let's talk a little bit more about the biofuels markets when we come back, because, boy, Ryan is up in that area where the expansion on the crush capacity and the delivering that bean oil to the refineries is going to be something really important in the future. We'll keep it going.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk. We've got Sherman Newland from Illinois, Ryan Wagner from South Dakota. Ryan, what's the excitement level around soybeans up there with the new crush capacity that's coming on in your market?
Yeah, a lot of excitement around that. It's been a long time coming, but we do have, you know, our plant, the H&E plant in Aberdeen, that has been a godsend for us. And I always say it's been worth at least 50 cents on our basis, it seems like. And then another one coming north of there up near Jamestown, North Dakota. And right now, you know, H&E plant in Aberdeen takes quite a few beans from the north, so I think it's only going to get better as soon as we get that plant built up in North Dakota. And it sounds like there's a couple more in the works up there and more in the works in South Dakota too. So local demand is always a good thing. We'd rather use it locally than send it overseas. And We're excited about that.
Yeah. Let me ask you about up in North Dakota, because they passed a bill to modernize the ag setup there. It's basically opening the door to animal agriculture in North Dakota. Has there been much conversation about that, and is the investment going to happen, do you think?
Well, you know, I'd have to plead ignorance on that one, Chip. I'm not exactly in tune with what's going on, but what I can say is I do know that North Dakota has kind of been lacking on the animal agriculture side of things. You know, there's not a whole lot of feedlots up there, or, you know, hog facilities or things like that. So if they're doing something to spur investment in that, that's only going to be a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all that meal's going to need a home, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. There's, you know, honestly, right now there's limited demand locally for meal. A lot of our meal gets shipped out, and I think with these soybean plants coming online, that's going to... you know, if we get an abundance of meal and cheap local meal, that's really going to change the calculus on feeding some of these animals around here. And I think it will just kind of naturally come about that way.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Sherman, what's the conversation around ethanol sound like down your way?
Right now we're, you know, working on maybe a carbon sequestration project. And that's been in the works for a while, and that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, you got to drill wells, you got to get, you know, landowners to sign off on it, you know, so it's quite the project. But that's probably some of the biggest things that we're doing here at the moment. Ethanol, I went to the National Ethanol Conference in Florida in Orlando, the first one I've been to. That was well attended. From, you know, everybody was talking down there. It sounds like things are going good, you know, the big push for E15 year round is out there. I guess we do have it for the summer program, but that has to be renewed every month. So that's kind of frustrating. It was nice to see that the administration did drop the E-RIN, the push for E-RINs. You know, maybe that'll help our biofuel out, you know, market wise a little bit. So, you know, things are looking good. Margins are good. You know, things are looking up for ethanol right now.
You know, one of the a piece of legislation that has been proposed that's really interesting, and they'd have to reopen the RFS by just a crack to make it happen, but it would get rid of the corn discrimination clause that basically says if it's corn-based ethanol, it can't be an advanced biofuel. The Fuels Parity Act would change that and make it possible based on the carbon intensity score of that ethanol plant. It would make it possible for corn-based ethanol to be an advanced biofuel. Sherman, that would be a huge win, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the, you know, like we're trying to get our carbon index down, and by doing the carbon sequestration, you know, as part of it. We're also putting in a small solar field there because we have some ground beside it that we can use to help pay for our electricity, and that gets your carbon score lower. So, you know, that seems to be the big thing. You got to get your carbon score lower. So
interesting.
You know, there's a lot of things to do. You know, of course, you have the sustainable aviation fuel people out there that are starting to, you know, sniff around and talk to you a little bit. And that would be huge, too. So
Sure. All right, Ryan, what are you thinking about when you get a little think time?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. I'm thinking about what I'm going to do with next hour or tomorrow or whatever right now, but you know, I'm just kind of looking at the bigger picture on, you know, as far as the marketing end of things go, where, you know, what's our profit goal for this year? I mean, we've had some good years the last couple of years and some higher prices, but I think we're in the midst of a correction, maybe back to more what we consider normal profitability areas on a per acre basis. And I think a guy's got to really sit down and think about what his target should be for selling these markets, because I am a little bit concerned, like, about overall demand, export demand in particular. And we probably need to get down to a level eventually, not saying it's going to happen today, but get down to a level eventually to kind of spur that demand again. And that's a time-consuming process. That's not going to happen overnight. So I think rallies, I'm just thinking about, you know, what does a rally look like that we need to sell? I mean, and what are our expectations for a rally right now?
Gotcha. Good stuff. What about you, Sherman? What occupies your thoughts?
Markets all the time. Markets and weather. You know, with the farm, the weather part of it for the farm, you know, of course, the weather part of it for the markets. But, yeah, I agree with what Ryan saying. I mean, you know, Brazil, South America, they're just knocking it out of the park. And, you know, we're coming in second place to them now. And, you know, China wants to buy as much as they can from South America. They're putting a lot of money into their infrastructure. You know, so without a supply problem somewhere, you know, markets do look like they're going to continue to grind lower. I agree, not only for this year's crop, but we got to start looking at December, you know, 24 and November of 24 soybeans.
Yeah. Good point, Sherman. It's time to start thinking about that 24 crop as well. You guys, thank you so much for making time for us. It's a busy time of the year, and we really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Thanks for having us on.
You bet. That is Sherman Newland from Illinois. You bet, Ryan. And Ryan Wagner up in South Dakota. Great conversation there, guys. Appreciate it so much. Okay, come back this afternoon. Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. And tomorrow morning, we've got Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group here on AgriTalk.